Luck back to throw with all kinds of time. Fires it. Picked off this time. Going back the other way. Puzzleski's looking for blockers. There they finally get the rookie. Whedon under center. Takes the snap. Play action. Back to throw. Under a bit of pressure. Turns and throws this one. And it's intercepted. Cyprian's got his first. He's going back the other way at the 30. Gets a block at the 20. And is still looking for room near the 15. And he's met and driven out of bounds there. Jonathan Cyprian with a game-changing play. And there's the shotgun snap. Pressure coming up the middle. Here's a throw, and it is intercepted. Dwayne Crox just took it away. He stepped underneath the receiver, Greg Little, and it's back-to-back picks.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Blythe has not been in the rotation long enough to have her own introduction in the open right there. I don't
not yet.
I don't know if she was anticipating that or not, Tony. As Jordan D'Armond put it, special guest star on the program.
Sure.
Today,
yeah, and I can tell you the trolling continues. I said on Monday, any active Jaguars player that is in the open this week, it'll feel like you're getting trolled. And once again, we got Puzzleski and Dwayne Grotz and Jonathan Cyprian, and they're in that open. Woo boy!
Easy now. Come
make
on.
It plays.
And who could you put it? What open can we play right now that would make you happy? Do we have one?
Old school. We need like Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Fred
we could go. We could go with a classic.
Remind you of the good old days.
Vendor berries, as I like to call them.
Is it fair to say that Blythe is the star of Helmets and Heels and also the 1010XL kickoff fueled by Sawyer Gas and presented by Coastal Equipment? Thank you very much for getting all the sponsors in. Well, is that fair to say, Tony, that Blythe is the star?
Certainly a bigger star than me.
What was going on with you and Lauren Brooks last night? Because Lauren texts me when I tweet out that you're coming on the program. She said, you're having my mortal enemy on the program tomorrow. And I know Lauren is not that kind of person. So what kind of level of animosity was there on the program last night?
We got into a little bit of a heated debate on whether or not morals should play a role in hiring a head coach. So
okay.
We were talking about Bobby Petrino with Louisville and how he had the infamous affair with the mistress on the back of his bike at Arkansas. And the moral line that he crossed, I guess, was hiring said mistress to work for Arkansas. But he was fired after that incident and got two more head coaching jobs after that. And I made the argument that most college football teams and NFL teams would still hire him, morals aside.
They may hire him, but like Petrino had to do, he'd have to kind of go through the wilderness, so to speak, right and work his way back up, kind of go and be an assistant or a coordinator level position.
Well, he went to Western Kentucky
sure.
for a year, and then he came back to
Louisville.
Which
is the equivalent.
Louisville.
That's
exactly.
The college equivalent for a guy like Bobby Petrino.
Exactly.
Right.
But my argument is that the majority of fans wouldn't care about that moral transgression. They would care about wins. And that's, I think, for a lot of fan bases, they just want wins, and they want to sort of separate the two.
I think you're right, and I think it differs when it happens and what happens afterwards. Like, when it happens, there's so much attention focused on it because that coach has not done anything for you at that point. So all the naysayers can say, this is terrible. What a bad example. And then as he goes 10-2 for the next several years, they go, what was that we were all upset about?
Exactly. Yeah. If your talent exceeds your baggage, then you always have a job,
well,
no matter what business you work in.
In many walks of life, what Bobby Petrino did wouldn't be disqualifying from getting hired. You know, there's a difference to me between what he did, Ray Rice, and all kinds of other guys out there. But you know what? We got our own issues around these parts right now with the Jacksonville Jaguars off to an 0-2 start. I told Lauren this when she was in last week. You guys are very impressive start to what I call the pre-pregame show on Sunday mornings. And from your vantage point, I know you kind of grudgingly picked the Jaguars to win this week, but you had that as a fan. There's something in it that tells me we're in for trouble. I kind of sensed that, and you still had a little bit of trepidation. You couldn't have expected it to be that bad, though.
No, not at all. You expected going into this season that this team would be competitive in every single game. And we saw that with Green Bay. And you think of Green Bay, this historic franchise that's been around for forever, and they have so much tradition. And to come in and play against and play that well and be 14 yards away from beating Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy, one of the best QB head coach duos in the National Football League, that's encouraging. And then to open up a game that you believe you're going to dominate definitely win. I mean, there was, I think, a two-score prediction is what I had.
Tony sold us all a bill of goods. I'm blaming him.
I did. And I offered this week. I know. I offered this week on the pregame show to take the loss on the picks contest just because of my pick. But apparently, Tyler, who wants to call me a homer over there, couldn't get one game right out of three. Tyler's probably going to have to wear that collar again.
So they get to pick your avatar on Twitter, Tyler? Is that how it works?
I'm already the loser of the first 2 weeks. It's not a good showing for me.
Oops. What are you going to do, man? I was looking at some numbers from last year. You know, we look at this Baltimore team coming in. And we're like, as I just said, kind of mucked it up with Buffalo. Buffalo's not very good, we don't think. Okay, they beat Cleveland. They were down big, though. Joe Flacco threw for 318 yards on this team last year without his top receiver, Steve Smith. Now, granted, it's a different Jaguar team. It didn't look like one last week, right? But I do think they have more talent in the secondary, particularly based on the way the first game went. Although, when you look how Green Bay's offense struggled blind in week two, you wonder what did they really accomplish in week one, you know?
And that's what I sort of go back to, and you think that Green Bay is going to be this great franchise, and if you can get that close to beating them, man, we really could get double-digit wins this
season. Right. They're really a 12-4 team. We look pretty good right now.
Exactly, and now you're wondering, you look at Aaron Rodgers' numbers, and I believe he has. It's two straight seasons in a row where his QB rating is 100, is just dipping each and every game, and so that's a little bit of a concern, but then it takes away that feel-good feeling that we had whenever the Jaguars did play against them.
Flacco threw it 45 times last year against the Jags. So did Bortles in that same game. Bortles was 22 of 45, less than 50% passing in that game for 188 yards against this Ravens defense, which hasn't really changed significantly, at least for the worst at this point in time. He was sacked three times, threw an interception. Jags did pick off Flacco twice, but he threw three touchdowns. One to Crockett Gilmore, one to Max Williams, who had a completely nondescript rookie season last year, and one to Chris Givens, who's just a journeyman. So it didn't really matter who he had back there. I think that was a state in part of the Jags' pass rush or lack thereof and their secondary. They only got the Flacco once in the game last year.
Well, and you hope they get Prince Amukamara back this week because it did look drastically different when Dwayne Grotz had to be on the field for this football team. And you saw the drop off on the back end, and we talked about it with Loggeman yesterday, the crossing route that wound up with a touchdown. But they throw the ball 6 yards, and they get 50 out of it. Because Dwayne Grotz basically just turned around and ran with his guy across the entire
field. Right.
And you could see it on the replay that Paul Posluszny, as soon as the ball gets thrown, he just looks over like, we got him. Like, we're just running him right into one of our zones, and there's nothing there. And then there's just this panic run straight down the field that I got to go meet him at the goal line now, essentially, because there was nothing on that half of the field.
No one's going to pretend Paul Posluszny's the best linebacker in coverage, but I almost feel like Blythe, like, you know, he's getting the Rasheen Mathis treatment. I was told by guys when Mathis was playing in the locker room, like, hey, man, it looks like he's getting burned because Rasheen would let a guy go thinking he had safety help over the top. And the safety, sometimes often Reggie Nelson, was completely out of position. And he'd look back, and there was no one there, so he'd start chasing him. And everyone would be like, how did this guy just blow past Rasheen when he never intended to stay with him the whole way? I think on that play that Tony's talking about, Posluszny was a little bit victimized as well. Because you see the guy in the middle of the field, he's near him, and then he just runs right past him. You think, oh, come on, how can you have, first, A, let this matchup occur, and then, Paul, what are you doing? You can't even disrupt this guy, but it turned out to be Dwayne Grotz.
I think it's one of the Luke Jokel situation, right, where you can have a pretty good game, but your reputation as of late is going to follow you. And if fans have that one play to replay over and over again, that's what they're going to gravitate towards, and that's what they're going to hold on to and just say this guy's done.
All right, well, let's have some fun this morning. Blythe Brumleeve is in studio here with us. By the way, I don't know if anybody else is messed up by this. For some reason, the clock is stopped at 21 minutes to 8. I don't know if that's p.m., a.m., or what's going on, but it's been sitting there, and that's like my clock that I look at for my cue. So we may have really long segments or really short segments, as the case may be today. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to adjust to this. I don't like my world being upset in the least way. 641-1010 if you want to get in on the program today on the phone lines. It's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. Our question of the day is this: does the Jaguars 0-2 start diminish your expectations or change your expectations for this team? And if so, by how much? Obviously, I would assume it would lower them, if anything. But you can hit us up on Twitter. You can hit us up on the Jags Today Facebook page as well, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Blythe, I don't have your Twitter right up in front of me. Is it at what is it? What are you on Twitter?
It's at Blythe Brum. My last name is hard for people to spell. So
it's not that hard. B-R-U-M, Blythe Brum, and just leave out the L-E-V-E. It's not that difficult, okay? So you can tweet any of us on that. You can hit us up on the phone lines, the text line. You know all the different ways you can get in, or any aspect of Jaguar football that you want to talk about. Let's start to turn the page away from the San Diego Chargers and start to focus in on the Jaguars and the Ravens coming up week 3 in the National Football League on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Blythe Brumleave here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, here we go. What should we call it? Get Well Wednesday? Happy Wednesday. What are you? Why this is so smiley?
Turn the page Wednesday?
It's kind of turn the page, whatever. You know, we had Check the Tape Tuesday. Nobody wanted to see it. It was awful tape. We burned it. We're done.
Yeah, we're done with San Diego. Or are we officially done with San Diego?
I'm kind of done. I mean, look, if somebody wants to call in we're on to Baltimore. Unfortunately, Blythe, in Jacksonville, it takes us 3 days to get over it, right? Unlike, Belichick gets up there at the podium after the game, 2 minutes after the game, we're on to the next week. Not us. We've got to wallow in it for a few days and deal with it. This is an interesting one. We'll get to the phones here in a second at 641-1010. This one coming in on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Good morning. See, they're right there in the spirit of Happy Wednesday. Something to ponder. We have had 32 games of Blake Bortles and 30, I think it's 31 starts, but 32, he played half of the Indy game his first year. Close enough. And he has not outplayed an opposing quarterback yet. That's debatable, but certainly hasn't outplayed many of them. We saw less games of Blaine, and Dave Caldwell wanted to move on. Is Blake getting too much of a leash? And may he not be much better than this, or is the coaching not helping him achieve his potential? I think it's a completely different set of circumstances here. I think they felt, by the time they got here, they wanted a fresh start. They didn't want the specter of Blaine Gabbert hanging over the organization. Gabbert needed a fresh start if he was going to have any chance. There was no way Gabbert was ever going to have success here, because you go out and you win a game in San Fran, great. You come back and lose the next week, they would have been killing him. This guy's never going to be a winner. He was never going to succeed here after the start to his career that he had. I don't really see that many parallels between the two. And this is the guy that they've invested in. Different regime, said, here's what we have left over for you. Everybody likes to start fresh. Whether or not we've seen enough of Blake to know what he's going to end up being, that's a different question, but I do think the circumstances are different.
It's definitely different because you're dealing with two totally different concepts. Blaine didn't have much to work with as far as a receiving core, and arguably the Jaguars have the best receiving core in the entire NFL. So I think Blake definitely benefits from that, but he's a risk taker, and so you're always going to see a high interception rate for him just because he takes those risks. But I like that about him at the end of the day, because he's going to be one of the league leaders in touchdowns like we saw last year. We hope that that's the case for this year, too. We hope it's not a regression, but he's going to – fans, I believe, have to be comfortable with – you got to take the good with the bad with Blake. That's just who he is.
How do you judge Gus Bradley? I mean, when I ask that, I'm not like, what is your final evaluation of him, but do you look at him and say, I started judging him in 2015 because the first 2 years don't count like they'd like you to do around here, I think. Or do you say, hey, you know what, 12-38, that's what I'm judging him on. Or I'm judging him on this year, he finally has enough talent and he's 0-2, and that's, you know, bad warning sign. How do you look at it when you evaluate Gus?
I think you have to look at the record, because – regardless of, you know, Gus is very much a rah-rah guy and everybody likes him, and that's what you hear over and over again, and that's what we've heard ever since he was initially hired. But at the end of the day, this is a results-driven business, and if you're 12-38, one of the worst coaches in NFL history, I think he's the worst in the modern era of NFL history, you have to look at that and know that that's not going to be acceptable, I believe, at any other franchise. So it's a good thing and a bad thing that the organization has stuck it out with him, because you sort of get a pass for those first couple years, but then the last 2 years you haven't seen any improvement. We still look unorganized. We still have a high penalty rate. And so that to me are correctable issues that should be getting better, and they're not.
All right, there you go. Vlad Brumleaf here with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, 641-1010. Phone lines loaded, so let's get out to them. Starting with Seth in Callahan this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Seth.
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing this morning?
Fellas and lady, we're good.
Yeah,
she's Black, kind of a fella in a good way.
Say, I really enjoy Helmets and Heels. That's a really cool take on the football game. Certainly a cool
show.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah, it's a good show. So anyway, man, my comment has to do with Greg Olsen, man. We all want to put all this blame on top of Gus, and I can't find it. You want to know why? Because Greg Olsen's out there designing schemes and throwing the ball behind the line to our running back more than our star receiver. Like, I can't even understand it. I can't grasp it. How is he not designing schemes that's putting our players in the best position to catch balls that are open? Blake's having to check down or throw behind the line because our receivers are not getting open. That has something to do with the way plays are designed, does it not?
Something to do with it, but I think, and I'm not making any excuse, trust me, Greg Olsen, along with everybody else, has to shoulder his share of the blame, particularly for this past week's game. But, you know, as we were discussing with Loggeman yesterday, some of that was probably in the game plan, the screen game to T.J. Yeldon, because Kansas City hurt him with it badly the week before. I heard Prosser make the comment this morning that, well, you should expect San Diego to make that adjustment. But you got to go in and test them on it, at least. And some of it probably had to do with the fact that Jason Verrett's one of the best young corners in the league that is not a household name. And if he's taken away your guy, as Greg Olsen said going into the game, Blythe, he was the guy who played Allen Robinson better than any corner in the league last year. You know, give some credit to San Diego for taking it away, but trust me, nobody is defending Greg Olsen's game plan when you end up ultimately throwing it eight screens basically to T.J. Yeldon that garnered 10 whole yards.
I mean, you have one of the best units, wide receiving or receiving corps in the NFL, and why you don't target them more than your running back is a big concern. Allen Robinson is our best player. He's a Pro Bowl wide receiver, and you have to throw – if the other guy makes a play on him, you throw it to Allen Robinson again, and you keep doing it because he's your best player, and why not play to your strengths?
You do that, and I agree to a degree. You have to try to force the other team to stop your strengths, but also one of the things that the Jags are trying to do is cut down on Blake's turnovers. Didn't work this week, but you know, forcing balls into coverage is probably something he's like, hey, look, you don't have to do it. It's not a one-man show with Allen Robinson. You got Julius. You got Allen Hurns. You got Marquise Lee. You've got all these guys. I would just say this about Greg Olsen. Last year, I mean, two games does not a full sample size make. Last year, he took Blake Bortles from what he was as a rookie to a 35-touchdown passer. Were there flaws? Absolutely. Led the league in interceptions. The running game wasn't very good. But the development of the passing game, nobody was complaining they weren't taking shots down the field last year when Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns were averaging ridiculous yards per catch. So I'm not ready to completely forget about the 16-game sample that Olsen gave us in his first season here and say that this guy doesn't know what he's doing as an offense coordinator. Bad game plan against San Diego. Bad everything. Game plan, execution, effort, performance, you name it. It was bad. But as a whole, I thought, you know, Olsen's first year here was pretty successful.
Well, and I thought watching the San Diego game and talking to Loggeman about it yesterday, he didn't come out and say this, but it feels like maybe there was an idea of getting Allen Robinson involved in that game early, and Verrett took that away, and I think it made Blake tentative. And after making a couple mistakes in that game, he was just shook and couldn't get himself back into any kind of rhythm. The team couldn't get any kind of rhythm because of that, because they had basically taken the best player on this team away. Well, they have enough weapons now on this offense that if they take A-Rob away, that shouldn't mean you're dead.
Right.
Right? Like, you have enough guys on that side of the ball. Your quarterback's going into, you know, his fourth year, whatever now. It's time to move past those kinds of things and make that next step in the offense that we talked about all offseason. The first opportunity for them to do that, they haven't done it. So I think it's important on Sunday against Baltimore for them to take that kind of step where they look like the more consistent unit on the football field, which they have not done through the first 2 weeks.
All right, let's go to Ron in St. Augustine next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ron.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm glad to be listening to your show this morning. But I guess I'm kind of in the minority here. I do not want a coaching change. I do not want to go through that crap again. It sets us back. And I put a little bit more onus on players, you know, also in these games. Let's not forget, these guys got to play. I don't know what kind of game plan you put out there. You got to play. You got to beat the guy in front of you sometimes. Sometimes they stop what you're doing, but you got to beat the guy in front of you sometimes.
I think there's certainly the players bear responsibility in this as well. But the idea to me, Blythe and Tony, that a coaching change sets you back. Well, Doug Peterson's 2-0 with a rookie quarterback out of North Dakota State up in Philadelphia. Didn't look like they got set back with a coaching change. Chip Kelly, well, he got fired there. But you know what? He went out to San Francisco. They're 1-1, which is probably better than anybody expected they would be to start the season. And, you know, if that is your reason for not making a change, and I'm not saying they're going to make a change. Certainly not making a change this week. But if that's your reason for not making a change, when would you ever get a new coach? Right? If you say that the hiring a new coach is only going to set you back. How much further back can you go than 12-38? Where are you going to be sent back to? I don't understand that. What, you know, what?
Change is the only constant in life. And so if you're uncomfortable with changing at the head coaching position, then you got to find another sport to love, because that's always going to happen, unless you're fortunately a fan of the New England Patriots, who can go out there and put their third string quarterback out there and their best players off the field, and they still find a way to win. And so to me, it's fans are tired of the excuses, and they just want to win. And it doesn't seem like it's going to happen with Gus, and there has been enough of a leash, but I sort of agree with you that I don't know how much you accomplish if you fire someone in the middle of a season, because rarely do those ever work out for the positive.
No, oftentimes, you know, you don't see interim coaches leading teams to the playoffs, but there's a reason for that, because the head coach previous got fired because the team was flawed and they weren't good enough to make that kind of playoff run. You know, sometimes, look, I'm not saying, again, it's not happening now, it's not happening this week. You lose by a couple of touchdowns each of the next two games, I think anything is possible, right? If you go into the bye week at 0-4 and having lost three straight double-digit games, if that were to occur, I hope it doesn't. Look, we all hope that Gus wins the next 14, right? And we're laughing at how silly we were. But I remember back in week 3 when we were worried about this football team. But the reality is, ultimately, you know, sometimes I think you make a move because you can't fire the players and you got to hold somebody accountable.
You have to. The fish always stinks at the head. And if we're not getting better, that's sort of been the mantra that we've been fed for the past 4 years, that we want to get better every day and we're not getting better. So what do you have to change? And you know, people make these changes in business all the time. They'll axe out a CEO if the profits aren't there. And I think that's a similar situation in the NFL. If you're not getting wins, it's a results-driven business, then you have to make a change.
The folksy Blythe Brumleave. I've never heard that. Is that an actual saying, or is this a Blythe original?
Change is the only constant in life.
No, the fish only stinks at the head. I've never heard this before. Yes, change is the only constant in life. We always hear that. Come on.
No, the fish stinks at the head actually comes from my old boss.
Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Kudos to your old boss on that one. All right. If you're on the line, stay right there. We'll get to your calls coming up here momentarily. We'll check in on the text line as well at 641-1010. I don't even know what the word for it is. Blythe Brumleave is here with us. How about that? Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey here with you. It's Jaguars Today. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. More of your calls straight ahead here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, you realize week 3 of the NFL season, heck, it can't get here quick enough, right, on the First Coast. But the first game of the season, or first game of the week tomorrow night, Thursday Night Football, you can get in with all the fantasy action that you want at FanDuel.com. You know what? You can say, I'm 0-2, like certain NFL teams. My team stinks. I'm going nowhere this year. Nah, it's not the case with FanDuel.com. It's 1 week fantasy football. You pick your contest, you pick your team, and you go out there and you try to win that week. Had a great week 1, not so great week 2. I'm right back on the horse for week 3. We've got our own listener league at FanDuel.com/Mike. If you think you know fantasy football, come prove it against us. Try FanDuel now. You'll get up to $50. In free entries, new users who deposit get 5 free entries to NFL 50-50 beginner contests that's valued up to $50, one per week for 5 weeks. The value of those will vary depending on the deposited amount. Simply go to FanDuel.com, Click the Join Now button, and all you need to do is enter my first name, Mike, M-I-K-E. That's F-A-N-D-U-E-L, FanDuel.com. Use promo code Mike, void where prohibited, and sign up and play head-to-head with us at FanDuel.com/Mike.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Join John Gruden, Susie Colbert, Michaela, and Gus Bradley October 13th for Meet Me at the 50, an interactive evening of football education by Jaguars players and coaches raising funds for the local fight against breast cancer. This is going to be presented by the Jaguars Women's Association. Get your tickets at jaguars.com/50. On Sunday, Baltimore comes to town for the third game of the NFL season. Kickoff is set for 1 p.m. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today.
All right, we continue on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Blythe Brumleave here in studio with us down at Everbank on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Getting back after your phone calls momentarily at 641-1010. Text line always cracks me up, especially the people who hate you. And, you're terrible. I never listened to you. But I know everything you said because I've listened to every word you say. I may have to break out a listening ban here pretty soon to a couple of people. A couple of unrulies out there. From time to time, I just like to ban them from listening to the radio. They're not allowed to listen to the program anymore. Sometimes it's only for a week. Sometimes it's for a month. It depends. But, you know, you have to have a certain level of acceptability to be allowed to listen to the program.
Callers have to have a good game, too.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Like we do.
Absolutely.
Callers have to step it up, too.
It's usually the people. The callers are usually great, okay? The texters think they have anonymity, not realizing, I got your phone number, okay? Tony knows a lot of law enforcement. There's something called a reverse directory.
Okay? I do.
We know who you are, all right? It's not that difficult. We know who you are, and if you think you're anonymous out there, you're not as anonymous as you believe. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, you name it, septic systems, check, anything having to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter's got the solution. I trust them to come to my house and work on my plumbing when I have an issue. Got an older house. It happens. Same-day service, weekends included. The right people with the right equipment is why Metro Rooter has been able to serve Jacksonville and beyond very well since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911, 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor here of Jaguars Today. Let's go out to Bud calling in all the way from Pennsylvania on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Bud. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Great. I'm glad to know that you guys know who I am because at my age, sometimes I forget.
All right. Well, we got you, buddy. So what's going on?
Listen, anyway, I don't think most people are, you know, most people might have a lot to say probably about what I'm about to bring up. I'm not here to talk about the offense. I'm not concerned about it. I just want, as owner of the Jaguars today, I'd like to let my coaches know that, yes, they are on alert, and my general manager, I've got an eye on them. And today, as Bud Kahn, I'm going to I've got together with all my wise men, and they've come up with a contract to sign Kevin Hardy, you know, to help this young pass rush. And, you know, and all I can say, damn it, go out and win, and tell me that's not what the Jaguars need to make a change. I think the fans need something.
I will, but I'll be 100% honest. I would think the retired Kevin Hardy is not what the Jaguars need. If you're suggesting they need to sign Greg Hardy, I would also say that's not what the Jaguars need. But that's me. I think we lost Bud.
I think we did. I think if you're looking to improve the linebacker core, you drafted him in the second round.
Right.
Like, that's what right. I would say.
And not in 1996, Tony,
right.
Like Kevin Hardy, right, with the second overall pick, I think he was. Not the second round, but you get the idea. Bud got a little confused on his Hardys. But is it fate that every time you come on this program, Greg Hardy is going to come up? I don't know. You haven't been on many times. And
I've only been on twice.
Right.
He's come up both times.
There you go. And I don't think the Jags are going to go that direction, although clearly you can't rule – anything like that out because they considered it, right?
Yeah.
And did their due diligence. Now maybe they did that and said, you know what, this guy is as bad a guy as he gave us a bad vibe, or maybe they're just saying, hey, you know what, let's see how it plays out. But their two young pass rushers combined for three sacks. Had this game been closer, or had they somehow won this game, we would probably be raving about, wow, Fowler and Ngakoue had three sacks between them. What an amazing pair of young pass rushers we have on our hands. But, of course, it didn't play out that way. All right, let's go to Alan in East Arlington. Hello, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. You all doing okay?
Good morning.
as well as can be expected for a Wednesday.
Sure.
Hey, I was sitting Sunday and watching that debacle, and I found myself being embarrassed. And yet I wasn't on the field, and I wasn't even in the stadium in San Diego, but I'm sitting in my living room, and I was embarrassed for what I saw. And then I read the column by Gene Perrette, and this one statement really got me. He says, while some players like Jared Ardrick were visibly upset in the locker room after the Chargers lost, others carried on as if it was no big deal. And I was wondering, you guys have an opportunity to talk to the players and so forth, and what's your take as to how they view this? Because is this just another loss, or do they realize how awful they looked?
All right, I haven't had a chance to talk to any players because of the way the schedule works. You know, they get back from the West Coast and
no
Tuesday's a day off
today,
right? And I'll have a chance actually to talk to Paul Posluszny after the show today for the pregame show. And I would, you know, Paul's a pro, and Paul's going to, I think, say the right things because he believes the right things. We talked about this a little bit before the show today. Players look at outcomes differently than fans do, right? Because the players, for them, they have 16 one-week seasons, basically, where all their focus is on this team, and then they are conditioned. Once you watch the film and understand your flaws and your successes, you've got to turn the page and you've got to move on to the next one. I wasn't there in the postgame locker room. I can't attest to what Gene Fournette said. I'm not doubting what Gene said, but I think you have to be very careful about reading into a player's body language or things like that as to their level of care or effort they put into it. I would hope, though, that a locker room where a team just got dismantled like they did would be a little bit more somber, right?
I mean, it just depends on the way that you accept losses, right? It's per personality, and guys have a different way of treating different losses. And I think when you go out on the field and you're that uncompetitive throughout from the start to the finish of the game, I think it almost reflects in the middle of the game. So they probably started that, I don't want to say grieving process, but they started dealing with the fact that they're, you know, they've accepted that they're already going to lose this game. And you could sort of tell that in the play style of some of the guys on the field. So they probably accepted it well before they entered the locker room after the game.
I think we're in a new era too, not a new era, but it's been maybe, I don't know, 20 years or so where we see guys, it's different now. You see guys before the game hugging on the field. You see guys after the game hugging on the field from opposite sides. You didn't get that prior to free agency. So maybe you go back to the early 90s because players stuck together. You created rivalries. You created hatred, you know, and these things. And you didn't cross lines. You didn't see Steeler players going to play for the Cleveland Browns the next year very often and things like that. So I do believe that just the way these players look at each other has changed completely.
The cutthroat mentality almost
it's
is
not
right.
Really it's not us versus them. Everyone's their own brand, so to speak. And I think for people who have been watching football like myself for a long time, it can be difficult to process that. If you grew up in this era, maybe that's all you know. But I do think, again, players, what you know, they look at it. This is a job, right? We have a bad day at work. You can let it ruin the rest of your week. Right, or you can say, you know what, I'm going to try to do better and figure out a way that I don't have these bad days going forward, but I'm not going to let it ruin my life. We deal with that on a day-to-day basis. They do it in the public eye. They get paid a lot more money than we do. We have a lot more interest in what they do. So I think they're held to a different standard. But I get it. As a fan, you're allowed to hold players to any standard you want.
I would definitely think so, but I think it's also okay for fans to accept that these are real people and know that they – how am I going to say this appropriately? It's okay for a player to lose internally, But for the fans externally, they care so much. They invest so much money, their free time into it.
They want to feel that that player cares as much as they do.
And that's where you've seen sort of in the past with like a Tom Coughlin or a Mike Mularkey. I think towards the end of Mike Mularkey's career with us, we felt like he didn't care. And then he started changing his persona. He started changing a little bit of the way that he coached on the field. The famous clipboard incident a lot of fans inferred that as him showing that he cares now. And so I think that that's going to be in sort of an interesting look on Gus Bradley, is if he changes his character externally on the field, as if will we see him get angry? Will we see him yell at
I don't think we're going
sideline?
To. I, if it hasn't come now, and right. I think Gus really wants to be – one thing you hear players say is they want consistency out of their coach. You can be a jackass. You can be the nicest guy, whatever. Just – be the same every day. What you tell me, I got to be able to take that to the bank, and I believe in what you say, and you're not going to tell me one thing and then do something behind my back. They want to be able to trust what they're getting and like that consistency. Now, you could say, well, this way is not working. You got to change something. It's crazy to keep doing the same thing over and over again. But I do believe that Gus feels that, you know, becoming the hysterical screaming guy on the sideline is not conducive to head coaching material. You can get away with more of that, I think, when you are a coordinator. And there are some coaches that probably get away with that as well. But this is the path that he's chosen to take as a head coach. And I don't expect it to change, Tony, no matter what the record is the rest of the
way. No, and I think for a lot of fans out there who say, well, you can't be a nice guy and win in this league, you can still be a nice guy and hold the guys on your team accountable. And we've seen guys be able to do that. We mentioned guys like Tony Dungy and Pete Carroll.
Yep.
These are guys that are – their players love them, and they still are able to hold them accountable. I think the questions about how accountable the players in Jacksonville are being held by Gus Bradley and this coaching staff, I think, are completely fair. And at 12-38, to question whether or not he's the right guy for the job is completely fair. And it's not because he's a nice guy if he fails. It's because he just wasn't a very good head coach.
All right, we got to take a timeout here. Are you going to stick around a little bit, Blythe?
Sure.
All right.
As long as you'll have me.
We've got this date in football. We've got the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up. Plus, we've got a pair of tickets that we're going to give away a little bit later on to Jags-Ravens. So be listening for your chance to score a free pair of ducats to this weekend's Week 3 NFL action right here in Jacksonville. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Blythe Brumlee, this date in football, and the Honda Drive around the NFL straight ahead on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, September 21st. Let's go back to 1970. And the first regular season Monday Night Football game aired on ABC. In that, heck, even the Factory of Sadness can have their day. The Cleveland Browns defeated the New York Jets 31-21 in front of more than 85,000 fans at Cleveland's Municipal Stadium. Very Jet-centric day today. In 1980 on this date, Richard Todd of the New York Jets completed 42 passes in a game. At the time, an NFL record. It's been since passed four times, including by Matt Schaub, who completed 43 for the Houston Texans against the Jags on November 18th, 2012. Continuing along on this date in football history, probably my favorite regular season game of all time, the Jets defeated the Miami Dolphins 51-45 in overtime, a record 884 passing yards that day. Dan Marino threw six touchdowns in defeat in that contest. Famous birthdays for September 21st from an NFL standpoint. 1972, John Kitna, maybe the embodiment of journeyman quarterback. Pretty decent player, 44 years old today. Several former Jaguars born on this date. A pair in 1983, both Reggie Nelson turns 33 years old, his first Pro Bowl last year.
Oh, man.
Derek Landry as well. Maurice Jones-Drew's high school teammate as well as his professional teammate for a while here in Jacksonville. Born in the state in 1985, Justin Durant now back with the Dallas Cowboys. He's bounced around for a few different teams, Detroit and Dallas included in there. And Doug Baldwin, Seattle Seahawks wide receiver, was born on this date in 1988. He turns 28 years old today, and that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Detroit Lions have placed running back Amir Abdullah on injured reserve with a foot injury. Abdullah left the Lions' loss to the Tennessee Titans on Sunday, was unable to return to the game. He met with the NFL's foot specialist, Robert Anderson, earlier this week, and then the team decided to place him on IR. Abdullah could still return later in the year if he recovers and the team chooses to use their lone IR-designated to return status on the running back. Tampa Bay Buccaneers running back Doug Martin is expected to miss three games. according to the NFL Network, with a hamstring injury he suffered during the Bucs' loss to Arizona this past weekend. Martin had an MRI on Tuesday. The news clears the way for Charles Sims to become the lead back for the Bucs going forward. The team also has Jaquizz Rodgers in their running back stable. Chicago Bears head coach John Fox described Jay Cutler as day-to-day on Tuesday, but Ian Rappaport is reporting that the sprained thumb on Cutler's throwing hand is expected to keep him sidelined for 2 to 3 weeks. Brian Hoyer will start in Cutler's absence, with Matt Barkley moving into the backup role for the Chicago Bears. And the Indianapolis Colts have signed wide receiver Devin Street off of the New England Patriots practice squad as they try to determine how long their own Dante Moncrief could be out. Moncrief left the Colts game on Sunday with an apparent shoulder injury. The team has not determined how long he will be out yet, but have indicated that they don't believe the injury will be season-ending. And in Jaguars news, good news on this front, Chris Ivory returning to practice today for the Jags on a limited basis. So we'll see about his availability this weekend over the next couple days.
All right, hurry back soon. All those banged-up Jaguars, they can use all the help they can get right now. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Vlad Brumleave here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. In a moment, we'll go back to the phone lines here. So if you're on the line, hang in there. But we do have a couple of open lines, so let's take advantage of that right now. And since it's week three in the NFL, we'll make it simple. We'll take caller number three at 641-1010, and we will hook you up with a pair of tickets to give away. And let's see, that pair of tickets comes with an opportunity for you to perhaps win dinner with Synderic Marks at Three Forks later this year and a set of Jaguar-themed rings, all courtesy of Global Diamonds. Each time we give away tickets this year, you're going to be eligible to go into that drawing. So caller three right now at 641-1010. We'll get that pair of tickets for Sunday's game and go into the drawing for the dinner with Synderic Marks at Three Forks and a set of Jaguar-themed rings, all courtesy of Global Diamonds. So get on the phone lines. We've got another pair we'll be giving away tomorrow, as well as let's get out to the lines right now. Justin in Atlanta has been hanging on the longest. Justin, welcome to Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are y'all?
Great. What's up?
I think I'd rather win dinner with Blythe, man. It says Derek Marks, I got to say.
Smart man. You're a smart man. That's all I said.
You gave her the giggles.
I think that she hit the nail on the head early, and I was going to bring this up to Jeff yesterday. With throwing to our best players, we do have two of the best wide receivers in the league. Why, especially in the first half, to me, the stubbornness with Gus Bradley came on when he just kept kept approving the calls for running the ball. You got two of the best wide receivers. Why not just continue to try to do that and make that happen versus doing something that's just flat out not working? Unless you're just too stubborn and stuck in your ways and you've built this persona that you're going to run the ball no matter what. And there's no other option. I mean, to me, that just seems the way it is. Even though last year was different, and we had so many, our receivers had over 1,000 yards and the touchdowns and everything. Let's just stick to what we do best. And I don't understand why you would change from that.
Well, here's the thing: T.J. Yeldon ran the ball 7 times the entire game. They didn't just keep running the ball in this game. Maybe it felt that way because they threw so many screen passes, right, and the ball was in Yeldon's hands a lot, and he was getting tackled right around the line of scrimmage. But they didn't just try to pound the ball in this game. He had 7 carries for 28 yards. He averaged 4 yards a carry. I'm not trying to hype up his stats there. I'm just telling you how few times they actually turned around and handed the ball to their tailback in this contest. Look, as far as the head coach goes in a situation like that anyway, my belief is that, yes, there's input certainly into the overall game plan, but on game day, Gus Bradley's not an offensive coach, right? He's a defensive coach. I don't want him necessarily, and most coaches like that, a defensive coach is not going to look over the offensive coordinator's shoulder and micromanage the play calling in the game. You approve the game plan. You don't, quote, keep approving the game plan. It's up to the offensive coordinator to make adjustments. Look, it's ultimately all Gus's responsibility because he's the head coach. I'm not trying to absolve him of anything in this, but in the actual implementation of that game plan on game day, I don't want my defensive-minded coach sticking his nose into every single play call that the offense is doing. The decision, should we go for it on fourth down? That's kind of a head coach's decision, right? What play we call to go for it on fourth down, to me, is the offensive coordinator.
And that's what you see. Isn't it true that in the modern day NFL, essentially, that the head coach is just a manager? And they're responsible for the clock. They're responsible for crucial situations. But as far as the nitty-gritty play calling, that goes to the team that he hired. And even if that's the situation where the guys that he hired, it's still I'll go back to my earlier quote: the fish sinks at the head. This is your team. These are your guys that you hired, and you still have to take responsibility for them.
Yeah, and I don't think is Todd Walsh talking to Gus Bradley about what they need to be doing in certain situations? Maybe, but I still think Gus Bradley isn't calling the defensive plays. He's part of the game planning throughout the week, and I think there's too much going on the sideline for the head coach to be the guy who has to be so involved with that kind of thing. He has to leave that to the guys that he's hired and trust them to be able to do the job. Are they prepared to do the job? These are fair questions. Is the game plan that they've had the last 2 weeks, has it been the right game plan? That's a fair question. I know for me, watching specifically Philadelphia on Monday Night Football, where Philadelphia has a rookie quarterback who's on making his first road start in the NFL. They put him in no huddle, shotgun, empty backfield basically for the entire first series and let him run the offense from there. He attempted 9 passes on the first drive, and I'm watching it as someone who covers the Jags going, if it's good enough for Carson Wentz in Philadelphia in his first road start, why don't we ever see that here? Where that's supposed to be the strength of this team is to put it in Bortles' hands and let those wide receivers control that game early and then come back to the running game. I don't think the offensive line is strong enough to just go out there and say, we're going to run the ball. I think they got to throw to run.
Their history of slow starts with this offense, with Blake Bortles at the helm, Tyler passed along the stat yesterday that had broken down touchdowns by quarter, touchdown passes for Blake by quarter, and roughly off the top of my head is something like 3 in the first quarter.
3, 14, 11, and 19.
Wow. Right? So 14, 11, 19. There are a few more in the fourth quarter, but pretty much.
He's really good basically in 2 minute situations, it sounds
exactly.
like.
Exactly. But yeah, because you have a few more in the second quarter. But second quarter, third quarter is fine. Fourth quarter, there's some balance there. They are notoriously starting slow, though, and it's continued. And so, yeah, why wouldn't you try to shake up something different? In the past, I think you've had the reasoning, well, if we go a quick 3 and out, we put our defense in a bad situation, get them on the field. Well, you spent $90 million on Malik Jackson. You got Tashaun Gibson. You got all these high-profile rookies. You got Prince Amukamara, and I know he didn't play this week, but in the big picture, you're not supposed to have this issue anymore, right? You're supposed to be. You got more veteran guys plus very talented youth. You got to put them in stressful situations. You got to trust these guys.
But in the entire offseason, what we saw and what we expected is that this is going to be they're not necessarily a young unit. They do have some veteran leadership, but this is going to take a while for them to gel chemistry-wise. We went into this season thinking that the surefire thing was the offense.
Right.
And what the Jaguars have usually lacked over the past few years is that we're not playing to our strengths and we don't take away the other team's strengths.
Right. And look, again, had they gone out and lost this game 35-34, something like that, maybe we'd all feel differently
yes.
about it. Still, you know,
they'd probably be confident they're going to beat Baltimore.
Right.
Honestly, if they played that kind of game, there would be a confidence that this team's going to get in the win column this week.
Right, because there'd be, you know, there'd be a lot of, well, they always do bad on the West Coast, and they always do this, and there'd be a lot of, we're close, they have to learn. Once they get over the hump, the floodgate's going to break and all that stuff. But that performance just makes you feel like, well, have they taken any steps forward this year? I think they have. I really do, roster-wise. But it didn't show up at all. There was no evidence of that on Sunday, so I'm taking that more on faith than anything at this point. By the way, Corey, congratulations, was our winner of tickets to the Jags-Ravens. We'll have another pair tomorrow, I'm told, with parking included in that as well. So check that out. Listen in to Jaguars Today tomorrow for your chance to score a pair of tickets. Still 21 minutes before 8 o'clock here in the Jaguars Today studios, just because the clock is broken. But at about 12 after here, time to take a timeout. And we'll come back. More Blythe Brumley. I think I'm not kicking her out of the studio anytime, but she can hang out as long as she likes this morning. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we move along here. Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Blythe Brumleave here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM down live at Everbank. Fortunato was shamed into fixing the clock and winding it. Now I'm happy to announce 20 minutes after 11 o'clock on the East Coast of these United States of America. Great job, Fortunato! Before we get to some sound from Malik Jackson, that's right, that was great job. We haven't heard that one enough lately. Malik Jackson on every Tuesday on with the boys of the Midday Chalk. We'll hear some of his thoughts coming up, including answering the question, where were you at the start of the second half there, Malik, when it looked like Sheldon Day was out there on the field in his place? Couple on the text line first, though, driven by Duval Ford. I know they didn't run the ball last game a lot, but a lot of it was in the first few series. They seem to stick to the run, third and long, punt for the first two series of every game. I understand they're trying to establish a run, but it is so predictable. You got to think it is possible to start with a passing game to set up the run versus a running game to set up the pass. Would love to hear your comments.
Just said it.
Yeah, I think it is.
I wish they would.
Right. You know, just if for nothing else, even if you are having some success running the ball in some games, you don't want to be predictable week in, week out. We talked about this a little bit, I think, with Jeff Logman yesterday. But we've talked about this so many times over the years, Tony. Bill Belichick every week drives fantasy owners crazy because one week they'll throw it 50 times, and the next week they'll give it to LeGarrette Blount 40 times.
Jonas Gray, 35 carries.
Right, Jonas Gray, 35 carries for 200 yards. I mean, they have these random – they're not random. They're game plans based on the opponent's weakness, but they are the biggest chameleon team. They just morph into what they want to be for that given week, and they have the coaching that pulls it off. Obviously, they have the quarterback, but even when Brady's not in there, does it really seem to matter? Does it look – if Brady were to announce his retirement, were you going to – do you think that the Patriots would not make the playoffs this year?
No.
Doesn't appear
fine.
That way, right?
Garoppolo has been good. Not just okay. He's been really good through the first game and a half of the season. Even with Jacoby Brissett, it's this weird thing with New England where they're going to play a 2-0 Houston team that's looked pretty good through the first couple weeks on Thursday night. And while I expect Houston to win, wouldn't surprise me at all if Jacoby Brissett wins that game for the Patriots. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Not in the least. That's how confident I am in what Bill Belichick does on a week-to-week basis to get his guys ready.
It wouldn't shock me. It would surprise me, though. I think Houston's going to win that football game if Brissett plays quarterback.
See, I'm not going to bet against the Patriots until they actually prove me wrong.
You didn't hear me putting money on it. But just in my own little thought world. Honest question, what is going on the sidelines that the head coach is so concerned with that he is not helping out with offensive or defensive calls? You can ask that about just about every head coach in the National Football League. They're trying to encompass everything. Now, some coaches do call offensive plays, right?
Sure.
Sean Payton will call his plays in New Orleans. If you're an offensive coordinator background, some defensive coaches call the defensive plays, but not that many. Most of that is delegated. And you're trying to – I mean, you know, somebody else made a point that it's not so much the specific play calls, but it's tempo, when to go, when to hurry up. Sure, I would assume Gus is having input on some of these things. I assume these conversations are taking place on the sideline, but you're responsible kind of like when it comes to game day, it's not that you're hands off, but you're kind of the CEO of the situation and most of the work has been done during the week. It's up to the players to go out there and execute it now. Now, I'm not putting that all on the players because if the work is done with an inferior game plan, you're going to suffer and you have to be able to adjust on the fly. But there is really less adjusting going on in the National Football League than people like to think. Halftime is short. It's kind of chaotic. Guys are getting taped up. You know, they're going to the bathroom. You have 3 or 4 minutes probably to sit down and say, hey, here are a couple of things that we're getting killed on. We got to make this adjustment. You can't make widespread sweeping changes to a game plan on the fly in the National Football League.
And I think halftime adjustments are a little bit overrated just because you have such a short amount of time to be able to analyze that information of what worked or what has worked and what hasn't. But the biggest complaint I hear with, or one of the biggest complaints I hear with Gus Bradley is that he's predictable and that you know what he's going to run before he even runs it. I think it was in the Texans game last year that the coaches said in an article to Peter King's SI and said that they knew what the Jaguars are going to run before we even ran it. And so to me, that speaks of a lack of creativity or creativeness, and you're just going to stick to your guns. And maybe that was to the point that the caller made earlier, that they're just, Gus Bradley is sort of stubborn and that he wants to stick to that game plan, whether it's working or not.
There are teams that are good enough to say, here's what's coming. Good luck stopping it. They're not one of them. Right, they haven't been one of them,
right,
at least on a consistent basis. Any given game, you never know. You might get have the right matchup, but there are teams that come out and you know what they're going to do to you, and you still can't stop them because they're so proficient at doing it. They have talent and they have great schemes and they execute it well and they're buttoned up, you know, and they know exactly what's going on. But again, they're just not in that point right now.
It could also be a mindset thing because you talk about the culture of a team And it sort of feels like that we're the complete opposite of the Patriots. Where the Patriots, you can put the next man up and you're going to expect them to do their job. In Jacksonville, that's not really the case. It's, we're down Chris Ivory and a few other guys, and it's, oh my God, what are we going to do? And it's no, it's, you should have the mindset, the next man up. You should have that level of confidence, and that's what this team hasn't had. We haven't had a level of confidence going into a game and expecting to win.
That being said, I hear the next man up, and I kind of roll my eyes a little bit sometimes because the next man up is not as good as the first man, or he'd be the first man up, right? I mean, that's the facts. Guys are backups for a reason. You just cannot plug in a player and expect the same level of performance. Can you get a coach to coach up a player, as we talked about with New England? Certainly. Garoppolo is not Brady. But you wouldn't have known that if you,
right.
You know, if you just did come down from Mars in the first couple weeks of the season.
It put him in a position to be successful.
Right.
And it feels like in Jacksonville for the past 3-plus years now, there's not a lot of putting guys in positions to be successful. And for a team where, I get it, New England could line up and they could tell you where they're going to throw the ball and you probably still couldn't defend it. That's how good they are running what they want to run at this point in time. The expectation going into 2016 was there would be enough on offense that the Jaguars could basically go out and say, we're going to dictate inside of a football game. And it just hasn't showed up yet. To this point in the season, it just hasn't showed up yet that we thought there was going to be at least a hint of something like that in Jacksonville. It's not here.
All right, a couple things. I hear this is what you were talking about, a Texans coach talking about the Jags in that SI article that you referenced, Blythe, the quote, on third and short yardage, they are a 0% blitz on the season. In other words, they're not going to surprise you. This is what they do. It's part, I think, of Gus's overall defensive philosophy. We're not going to trick you. We want to get after you with the front four guys. We don't want to send a lot of exotic stuff. And Tony and I would sit here, at least I know I would. I don't want to speak for Tony, but I think he agrees. And we'd say at a certain point when you're getting beat by that, doing the same thing, go ahead and blitz Tom Brady. How can it get worse?
Right.
They didn't punt at all last year. How could it have been any worse? Why not at least give it a shot? You know it's a long shot. He's probably smart enough to pick it up and see what's coming, and maybe he's going to burn you. But what you're doing is not working. Sometimes you feel like you need to just try something for the sake of trying it. But, again, it goes back to they know what they've got. They know what their personnel is capable of. People say, hey, how come so-and-so is not playing more? They see him every single day in practice. If you don't trust the coaching staff to make the evaluation on who should be on the field, then you really don't think that that's the right coaching staff to be around. And I understand in this market right now that that's a growing sentiment. But anyway, this passing along as well, Josina Anderson from ESPN said Vikings running back Adrian Peterson told her, according to Anderson, that he's planning to have surgery tomorrow to repair his meniscus, and he's, quote, doing it with faith and optimism. Peterson has what is known as a bucket handle tear, and I'm told that's a minimum, Anderson speaks, of 3 to 4 months out and usually up to 6 months. Again, Peterson has faith.
So Peterson will be back in 3 weeks.
Maybe. Knowing AP with his track record, I'm not going to doubt he'll beat the timeline, but you can be adjusting your fantasy rosters accordingly.
How cruel was that, though, when he got injured, that they had to take him through the stadium bar in order to go to the locker room?
That's called a bad layout, a bad plan is what that is.
Can't get a cart for the guy? Like, come on.
Something, right? But I guess that's their path now. It's a brand-new stadium. They've chosen to have that, like the Jags have the Prowl. They've got that interactive experience. The Jags do have the option to go directly into the locker room, though, if they choose to. So put an extra door in. Let's hear a little bit from Malik Jackson yesterday on with the fellows of the Midday Chalk, and he was asked, why didn't you start the second half?
Malik, did you start the second half?
No, I didn't start the second half.
What, you want to tell us why or what happened?
Coach just said, you know, we're going to, you know, we're just trying to get everybody a feel of the game, let everybody play. So, you know, I just do what I'm told.
And so is it as simple as that, just trying to get as many guys rotated in there?
You know, that's what they want to do. I think we just got to keep throwing them. You know, it's a long game, and we're trying to keep everybody fresh. And, you know, I think that's what it's all about. And, you know, this is what it is. Well, so,
raise your hand if you're buying that answer.
Did you hear the laugh?
Yeah.
He laughed twice.
I'm not buying that answer. There's more to it. I don't know exactly what is more to it. I speculate that there's more to it. No one's told me that specifically. But as we talked about yesterday and we talked off the air this morning, Jags had the ball at the end of the first half. Then you had halftime. They had the ball to start the third quarter. That's a lot of rest for a defensive player.
$90 million.
Your $90 million guy should have been fresh as a daisy in the third quarter there.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a case of let's just have a normal rotation. I'll put it this way. Anybody expect Sheldon Day to start the second half this week against Baltimore? I don't.
No.
Or any other second half this season, for that matter.
No.
Is my guess.
It would be surprising if he did. Malik Jackson joining the boys on the Midday Chalk yesterday. Also asked by T-Wig, do you think the guys are not being utilized correctly on the defense?
To be super honest with you, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, as a player, you get put in the scheme and you play. If you're a good player, you do it well on any scheme. And, you know, I think in Denver, you know, specifically, I was, you know, we played 3-4, we played 4-3, more known for the 3-4, but, you know, we did a little bit of 4-3. And I think we just need to start getting things down packed. You know, there are some things in the game that coach caused some calls, and, you know, you guys can look at it and say, you know, oh, that was a bad call, but it was clearly, you know, no communication on the play, or, you know, people just not doing their job. And, you know, as a team, we can't have that because, you know, explosions over 14 yards is unacceptable. We just need to stop that as the players. You know, it lands on the players because we're the ones on the field.
I do grant Malik that oftentimes we watch a game and we think it's a guy's fault and it's completely someone else's, or it's scheme dependent, or, you know, in the case of Paul Posluszny, as we pointed out, Tyrell Williams crossing the field, he's supposed to guard him kind of in that middle area and pass him off to Dwayne Grotz. And Dwayne Grotz had la-di-da gone, followed his man down the field despite the fact that he was in his own coverage. So it looks at times like one thing's going wrong. Bottom line is there's a lot of things going wrong. Even if we can't pinpoint the exact specific of who it is, there's just too many mental errors taking place still on this football team. Dwayne Grotz has been in the league enough years now. He can't make a mistake like that.
No.
And, you know, Dwayne Grotz, I have a feeling – 2 weeks from now, when Aaron Colvin comes back, Dwayne Grotz is probably looking for a new football team unless things turn around in a hurry for him over these next couple of games.
I don't disagree.
One more here from Malik, and this was a question about all the noise and the hubbub from the fans with their dissatisfaction with Gus Bradley. Is he hearing that and paying attention to it?
You know, coming in here, I understand who Jacksonville was in the past and in their record. And, you know, I understand, you know, Coach Bradley's been here for a while. And, you know, this is a what have you done for me lately league. And I'm trying to come in here and help him, you know, get this thing turned around. He's done a great job getting players in here that know how to win. And guys who know what it takes, I think we just need to start putting it together and fast. I think people are a little hasty on telling him he needs to 0-4 or get out of here. You know, I think, you know, in this business you have to have the whole season because you can turn it around at any second. And I think we just need to do it, man. I think he's a good coach. I think he's very cool, very players coach, and somebody who allows us to be great. We just need to take it and run with it as players and turn this thing around.
And the reason 0-4 was referenced there, I believe the question was asked, you know, the buzz is, hey, if they come back from London winless, could there be a change at quarterback? And as you said, it can, the turnaround could come at any time. How long do you keep saying that when the turnaround doesn't come? It could have come at any time last year, right, when they were in that division, horrible division, but in the race very late into the season, and they never were able to seize advantage of that by putting together a win streak. I hope Malik's right. Look, I hope it starts this week. We all do, against the Baltimore Ravens. Blythe, hang around for a few more minutes. We're going to welcome in Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, get a weekly look at the injury report with him. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Blythe Brumleave here with you on Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Well, here's the good news. Here's what you got going for you, Jags, as you deal with your own injuries. We're going to talk with Dr. Stephen Lucy of Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars here. But Dante Moncrief, Colts wide receiver, has a broken shoulder blade, and he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. That means he will not be suiting up against the Jags in London. Does that mean we're all rushing to get Philip Dorsett in our lineups next week? I hope that's not what that means. But the Jags, a little bit banged up themselves. Let's welcome in Dr. Lucy from JOI. Hi, Doc. How are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you. What do you think, Blythe, permanent addition to the show?
She sounds good.
She does sound good.
Certainly, it's certainly better looking than you two. So
nice. That is such a low bar. That is not even a compliment to her, honestly. Really, come on. Let's talk Kelvin Beachum here, Doc, because I, as a layman, I'm easily confused. Kelvin Beachum looked like he got knocked out on the field. Okay, they take him to the hospital for tests and observation in San Diego, and tests come back, quote, negative, which I'm led to believe is a great thing in medicine, yet it probably he's in the concussion protocol. You don't think he's likely to play this week. Explain to me how all the tests can come back negative and he's still in the concussion protocol. What are they testing for?
Sure. I mean, I thought that was a pretty scary injury. I watched it over and over again, and all I could see was the guy's knee hitting him in the head, but they were treating him as if it was a spinal cord injury, which is what I thought it was. And it's a relief that it was just a concussion. But what happens with that, let's say he was out for 30 seconds. For the docs and trainers on the field, 30 seconds seems a lot longer, trust me on that. But you have to treat them as if they have a spinal injury. So you saw him slowly roll him. They fixed him on his head, put him on a spine board, sent him to the hospital. First thing they do is clear their spine to make sure there are no fractures. And then, you know, probably by that time he's awake and talking. And so then they put him through some tests, maybe a CAT scan of his head, and all of that's negative. But a concussion usually does not show up on all those tests, so that's not really what a concussion's about. So he gets cleared, he gets sent back. That's all good. But when you enter a concussion program, first of all, you don't really start the program till you're symptom free, meaning you have no headache, you have no nausea, you don't feel weird, you can remember stuff, you can see stuff. And sometimes that may be a week. So we don't know whether he's really even ready to start on the concussion program. But once you start the program, then it's a progression of they do neuropsychological tests. You pass, fail that. If you pass, then you start gradually doing things. They want to be sure he's symptom-free once he starts exercising. And then they want to stress the exercise. And then when he gets through that, then you're able to get on the field. But it is tough to do. Other than those little bell ringers on Sunday that I'm straight on Monday, those we get back the next week. A more serious thing, it's hard to get them back. It's not impossible, so I'm not saying for sure,
okay.
But it's just unlikely.
Very unlikely we'll see him, and I think that's what most people expected. Where do we stand on Prince Mukamara with the hammy? You got Jared Odrick dealing with, what, a tricep injury right now? Mm-hmm. What about those two?
Right. Well, we've certainly gone around and around with these hamstrings with our wide receivers. But remember that these DBs are speed guys, too, and they're start and stopping and acceleration, and that's what hamstrings do. So this seems to be maybe more than just a little hamstring. And so it's going to be a day-by-day, week-by-week. I don't think he's a slam dunk to be ready this week. You know, again, the linemen can usually get back a little sooner than the speed guys. So we'll have to see what they do with him early the rest of the week in practice and cross our fingers and hope he's ready. But, again, he's another one I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't make it.
Odrick?
Odrick strained his triceps, which is that muscle behind your arm, and it's the thing that you use to extend your arm.
He explains that like I don't know what a tricep is, because obviously I've never developed them. I think that's what he's getting at.
And you don't probably have to push around 330-pound tackles like he does either. So, I mean, he's got to keep those guys off of him, and that's a strength thing. If your triceps aren't there, that's all the muscle-building bench press, and a lot of that is chest, but a lot of that's triceps. So if you can't push, you can't play.
Still don't know about Chris Ivory's availability yet, right?
Yeah, I understand. He might try to do a little stuff in practice this week. If he does and that goes well, then maybe we'll see him too. So he's not a definite in or out from what I understand at this point. It's going to be a day-by-day deal.
All right, last one for you. Unfortunately, that's the last for the Jaguars. But Adrian Peterson with a bucket handle tear, of the meniscus. And we're seeing that he's going to have surgery to repair it tomorrow. You say that until you open it up, you can't be 100% sure it's even repairable, right?
That's correct. You can't tell from an MRI, and it's a big difference. People always say my meniscus got repaired, but in fact, probably only 10% get repaired, 90% get removed. The good news, when you remove them, you can get back to playing in, you know, 2 to 4 to 6 weeks. When you repair him, you get a situation like we had with Miles Jack, and he was out for the season, because that may be a 6 months deal, because that has to heal, whereas if we're just snipping out the tear and putting it in the bucket, you're ready to go.
All right, Dr. Stephen Lucy with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's have a less lengthy injury report to talk about next week, shall we?
Well, we did good for the first couple, but
you're right.
It's football season
now.
That's
right. It happens. Doc, thank you so much. Appreciate it. There he goes, Dr. Stephen Lucy here with us. Tony, let's take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today.
Sure.
Asking folks after an 0-2 start, and baked into that question is the way they went 0-2 How did that lower your expectations, if at all, would we get?
Here's what we got from Andy. Yes and no. Green Bay performance raised my expectations. San Diego lowered them. Ravens could give us a better idea. From Aussie Jag, definitely not very ordinary performance last week, but the team is way too talented. From Jay, we got no, and then he sobs uncontrollably. From Daniel, 0-2 record hasn't lowered my expectations, but the way the team played and coaching in this last two games has. Demetrius, no, but it's concerning that the reoccurring issues this team faced a season ago are still here. From Alvaro, no, my 10-6 is still expected. You expect them to win 10 out of the next 14 games. Whew. Wow. From Isaiah, yes, to the point where it might cost Gus his job. There we go.
A few here on the Facebook page and various opinions here. No, I expected another 4-12 year, so that didn't lower my expectations. That
ouch.
One, and from David. Daniel said, not at all. I expected an 8-9 win team, and they can still achieve that with wins against the Ravens, Colts, Bears, Titans, Texans, Bills, Titans again, Colts again, in order by schedule. So he's got it all broken
down.
Maybe we can pick off Detroit or the Chiefs to pick up a 9th win as well. Craig said, not at all. Still confident we'll win 8. We should have beaten the Chargers, but didn't. Our team has way too much talent to be a 4-12 or 5-11 team. Jaguars strong all the way from Australia. Thank you, Craig, for weighing in on that. Josh said, yeah, I expected at least 7 or 8 wins, but I don't trust his coaching staff. I think the talent is there to win 9 or 10. I'm not sure we even win 6. At this point, Doug said 9-7 to start the year was his expectation. 5-11 at the moment. James said he expected 8-10 because that's what he thought Gus needed to keep his job. Now he sees 3-5. So look, whether they're right or not, it just goes to show you, Blythe, how psychologically impactful that result was, the way the game went down with the San Diego Chargers. You go out there and win this week. And you can't just win this week and then go to London and lose to the Colts. You can't have a 1 week reprieve. But if you can win these next two heading into the bye, and I swear I feel like this is last year all over again, right? If they can only win this, and they could win this one, and if the Texans lose, and then they could be here, and they'll only be a half game out of the 5th wild card spot. You know that, but it's still true. Go out and win this week. It's all you can do. It's the only one you can take care of.
It's sort of rationalizing hope at this point, because I think it was Donovan Darius that was on the show, on your show last week, that said that players don't necessarily think, you know, one game at a time. They think in quarters, and they think 4 games at a time. And if they can come away, you know, with the next couple games with a win, I think we're looking okay. But that's still the fan and me hoping and wanting those wins. So I try to take that out of the equation, and I go to Vegas. And Vegas, they bet with their wallet. They don't bet with their heart. And that, to me, is it. That's where I put a lot of onus on it. And they predicted us winning 6 games. And so I think that's a realistic expectation. I don't know that, especially after last Sunday, I don't know that we see any more than 6 wins.
How dare you? 14-2, Blythe. Come on, Blythe! All right, Blythe Brum, leave everybody at Blythe Brum on Twitter. Said that kind of right, I believe.
Is that right?
It's not that difficult, but for me, it is. You can catch her, of course, on Helmets and Heels with her 3 lady cohorts on Tuesday nights here on 1010XL, and then the 1010XL kickoff, fueled by Sawyer Gas and presented by Coastal Equipment, featuring your arch nemesis, Lauren Brooks.
Your
mortal enemy, and the one and only Tony Smith, ladies and gentlemen. Lauren, we love you. We know you're kidding, we think. We're not 100% sure about that. Blythe, we appreciate it. Thanks, as I said, you would do on Twitter yesterday for coming in and classing up the joint today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You got it. We'll do it again soon. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. Thank you to Dr. Stephen Lucy of the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. Glad we could bring you some sound from Malik Jackson as well from yesterday's Midday Chalk. He'll be appearing with those guys every Tuesday. Likewise, Telvin Smith on the Franchise Show every Tuesday at 4:40. So check out both of those guys on the defensive side of the football. Speaking of which, I'm going to talk to Paul Pazluski coming up here in just a few minutes for the pregame show. So we'll turn you over a little bit early to the boys of the Midday Chalk, as they're coming up at the top of the hour. For Fat Tony, for Blythe, and for Joe Fortunato and Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. Thanks for tuning in and listening once again to 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here talking about Dandy Foods, Dandy Sandwiches and Subs, just a staple of consistency here. You know, I say they're consistent. They consistently improve, though, year after year after year. It's not the same old with Dandy. You could stick with some of the classics, like the classic Cuban, the egg salad, the tuna salad. Those are all great. They still make them. They're all delicious. But they've expanded the menu a little bit more every year. The Anytime Deli line, a little bit more high-end for you. Some great variety that they've got. Variety, taste, freshness, and certainly at a price point that you're going to feel like you got your money's worth. You know why? Because you do get your money's worth with Dandy in the Anytime Deli line. Pop into your local Circle K. Go to your local Kangaroo Express and make a beeline to the Fresh Case and just be amazed at the variety. Breakfast sliders, lunchtime wraps, classic sandwiches and subs. They've got something for everybody. In fact, they probably have several somethings for everybody out there. So whether it's tailgating, lunchtime, breakfast, anytime you're hungry for food on the go, do what I do. Go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
You guys have a good day. Peace.